Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harris. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, three men who have a combined career tournament winnings total of over $12 million. Greg Raymer will join us. He's responsible for almost $7 million of that. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is responsible for almost $5 million of that. And I have won over $1,000 in tournaments. Hi, I'm Paul Harris. Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips is actually sitting beside me at the feature table at Harrah's St. Louis. Welcome back home.
Absolutely. It's good to be home.
You've had a long run in Las Vegas, and I understand you're going to have a really long run here because I know I'm flying back out to Vegas tomorrow night. And when are you going back? Because we got the NBC heads up later this week.
Yeah, no, I'm heading out tomorrow also. Be out there. We start. The draw is Thursday night. We play Friday and hopefully Saturday and hopefully Sunday. For this. NBC heads up, 64 people, invitation only, pretty awesome tournament, let me tell you.
For those of you who don't know, Dennis came in third last year. He and Scotty Wynn both came in third. They were beaten by Eric Seidel and Annie Duke. This year, a lot of the same people will be returning, as well as some new faces, including Daniel Cates, Jungleman 12.
Yep, absolutely.
Who has gotten a reputation as being one of the hottest online players in the world in the last year. We had him on the show a few months ago. I know you don't want to face him in the first round.
No, you don't want to face anybody in any round, hardly out there. You got to realize it's 64 people, invitation only. There's half a dozen qualifiers, and three or four different celebrities are going to be there. I think Emmett Smith's going to be there. Oral
right.
Hershiser is going to be there.
Jennifer Chilly will be there.
There you
Jason
go.
Alexander, Don
right.
Cheadle.
But very few. Basically, there's 50-plus of the top players in the world
right.
playing there. There aren't very many soft spots.
Let me just mention some names here. Johnny Chan, Doyle Brunson, Barry Greenstein, Phil Hellmuth, Annie Duke, who won it last year, Eric Seidel, the runner-up, Jonathan Duhamel, who won the WSOP main event this year, will be there, as well as, I mentioned, Jungleman 12 and other new players like Faraz Jaka, Liv Boree, Eugene Kachaloff, John Reisner, and Bluff Player of the Year, Sorel Mizzi. And I'm hoping that in an early round, Reisner and Mizzi have to go heads up after their recent controversy over a Chinese poker game they played and some questions about somebody bottom dealing off the deck.
The other thing, too, it'll be Return to the U.S. of Peter Eastgate. He's going to be playing it there, too.
Oh, that's right.
I would love to see a final table of Peter and I playing heads up. Wouldn't that
be
awesome?
Nice. That would be nice.
I would love to see a final table of me playing with anybody.
As long as you get there, it doesn't
exactly.
really matter.
Who cares about the rest
well,
of it?
Well, you know what? Here's what you want. You want one of the online qualifiers to luck box his way to the final table, and then you take him on. That'd be much better than having to face Isildur or Cates or one of these other really hot young guns.
How about Emmett Smith?
Well, there you go.
Now, be careful what you ask for. Remember Phil Ivey, I think Don Cheadle played him in the first round last year, and guess who won?
Oh, that's right.
That's true.
You're absolutely
careful
right.
what you ask for.
Knocked out of it this year, not included on the invitee list, Mike Sexton, Paul Wasica, Jamie Gold, Jerry Yang, and Dario Minieri. Also, no Sammy Farha, who's been a part of this for
yep.
six straight years. I don't know if he wasn't invited or if he said, you know what? The PLO home games in Houston are just too good. I'm going to stay here. We haven't seen a lot of Sammy on TV in the last couple of years.
Actually, you haven't. And again, this is so hard to get an invite to this and so difficult to crowd because there's so few people. You got the automatics that are going to be there every year, the people that have won the WSOP in previous year, somebody like a Doyle, somebody like an Ivy, the rest of them. There's very, very few people that are added each year.
So since last year when you came in third, have you had many opportunities to practice your heads-up skills?
Actually, you're playing heads-up many, many times. You don't even realize it. Most tables go down to a heads-up. It's a different type of a game. But, yes, I have played quite a bit of heads-up.
All right. It's a $25,000 buy-in this year. It was $20,000 last year.
Right.
First place this year will be $750,000 instead of $500,000 last year. And so all the other prizes, I'm sure, are getting ramped up as well. Mm-hmm. For those of you who can't be at Caesar's Palace this weekend, you'll get to see it on six consecutive Sundays on NBC starting April 17th. Some weeks it'll be 1 hour, some weeks it'll be 2 hours, some weeks it'll be 3 hours, depending on what other sports they have. And we'll have hopefully a chance to sit down with a lot of the players while we're out there. We're going to try to record a bunch of interviews over those couple of days. Hopefully you won't have time to do that, though.
Well, it would be nice. But actually, you remember last year, Chris Moneymaker? I can't remember the exact. I think in the first two rounds, he played a total of five hands.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
All in on the second and one and like the third or fourth hand and the second time and won both of them.
Right.
So it doesn't take long to play heads up sometimes.
But some of them, one of your matches last year went over an hour.
Oh, it was almost 2 hours. Hour and 40 minutes or something like that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Speaking of things that you've been doing out in Las Vegas or will be doing out in Las Vegas, last time we talked to you a week ago today on this show, you had just played in some deep stack event at the Venetian. Well, you've been playing in a lot of those over the course of the month of February, but you said, remind me to tell you a story from the Venetian. I don't know what the story is, so what was the story?
It was in the main event. It was actually fairly early. The blinds were 75-150. In the deep stack, you start with 20K. I had built mine up to 24. Guy to my immediate left was down to just a little over 12,000. He had played almost every hand.
Mm-hmm. That's a good strategy, by the way. I like to see other players playing every hand.
It doesn't bother me too much, I have to admit. Came around to me. I looked down at an ace-king. I raised it to 375. The gentleman who had been involved in all the hands made it an even 1,000. Button was next to him who folded. Small blind called the 1,000. Big blind folded. So it's a three-way, 1,000 each, 3,000 in the pot then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll... big blind over that 3150, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you've got ace-king.
And I've got ace-king.
Suited?
No.
Okay.
All right. So anyhow.
Is this a point where I should remind people of our bet, of our prop bet?
You can, but you're not going to collect. So anyhow, flop is ace-king-7.
Okay. Flopping top two is pretty good.
Not too bad. All righty. First guy who wasn't a small blind checks. Mm-hmm. Comes around to me. I've got the guy who re-raised me to my left. He's been playing so aggressive, the whole bit like that. He's over there counting chips and everything. I go, okay, no problem. I'll just check raise him, and we'll get the spot done.
Mm-hmm.
I check.
He's already counting chips out. He's already making motions.
He was.
I love that.
Oh, you do. Until he checked.
Oh.
All right, no problem. Next card out is a 6. Now, this puts two clubs on the board, but it's an ace-king, 7-6, with a king of clubs and 6 of clubs. So, again, no real danger, anything like that.
Fairly dry on the turn.
It is. First guy checks again. Don't worry about him now. By now, even if he'd flopped an ace or a king or something, he'd be betting out. I figure he's got some sort of middle pair or whatever. I'm not too worried about that guy right now, or even suited connectors.
Yep.
At best, I figure he's got maybe a gut shot with a 7-6, you know, that type of thing. So, all right, comes back to me. Now, again, the guy is counting chips again. I'm going, he re-raised me to 1,000 pre-flop. Even if he has those 10s or jacks or something, he's going to take a stab at the pot, right? I check again.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, there's $3,150 in the pot.
Yep.
He bets 5,000. He only has 11,000.
Uh-huh.
Okay. First guy mucks.
Yep.
Gone. He's out of the pot. It's
mm-hmm.
me and him.
Yep.
What do you do?
I'm probably going to see if I can get the rest of his chips in the pot.
Would make sense. You would think an overbet.
I mean, what are you afraid of here at this point? He had to flop a set. And after two checks on the flop, he's probably going to bet there. And that most players are going to bet in that situation on the flop.
Right.
Just to make it look like a continuation bet and see where they are.
Sure.
In this situation where he's overbetting the pot, I'm not putting him on a huge hand.
Yeah.
I haven't played with him before, and you had. Mm-hmm. And he'd been playing, if he had been playing aggressively, and I do know some players in tournaments especially who early on are overbetting the pot because they just want to take it down even when they've got monsters. He might be one of those players. I don't know. But bells are going off in my head from this bet.
Okay. All righty. So would you just smooth call him there? Would you try to put the rest of the chips in? You're trying to find some way to get the chips in the pot.
Correct.
Okay. I just went ahead and checked. You called him. Sorry.
Okay.
Called. So now he's got only 6,000 left.
Mm-hmm.
Turn card is a 10, and it's a 10 of clubs. So there's 3 clubs out there.
Uh-huh.
All right. He re-raised me. Again, thinking what kind of hands you could put him on that he could have hit this flush club draw.
Yep.
The king of clubs is out there. The only hand I think that he re-raises him with at all, if they hit the clubs, is ace-queen of clubs.
Okay.
That's a possibility. I don't think it's a good one, but it's a possibility. He is an aggressive player. It could be there.
Yep.
If that's the case, I'm in big trouble because I'm not laying this thing down.
Right.
Possibly had ace-king, too, and slow-played it.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of possibilities. There are possibilities afraid of the club thing. This is early in a tournament. I've still got a decent amount of chips. Now then, do you bet the 6,000? Do you check and see if he bets? What would you do with this case to try and get the chip?
I am probably going to try to represent the flush.
Okay.
And make it look like I didn't have much on the flop. I picked up the club draw on the turn, and now I've made my flush, and I'm probably going to bet enough to put him all in.
That's exactly what I did. I put 6,000 out there.
Mm-hmm.
The guy just throws his hands up and goes, oh, I can't believe this. I can't believe how horrible I played this hand. I can't lay it down. I call. Show me your clubs. He turns over ace-ace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I doubled him up.
Yeah.
I was totally misread the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Totally did not put him on that.
Mm-hmm.
A set of sevens was a slim possibility there, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
An ace-queen of clubs was a slim possibility.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he had a queen-jack and hit the straight.
Well, remember what I said before about some guys who, you know, they will check the flop or they'll just overbet it because they want to take it down right there. That's what he was trying to do on the turn, and he did have the monster. I probably would have made the same mistake.
Well, yeah, I replayed it a dozen times in my head, trying to figure out how I could have done something different. I could have re-raised him again pre-flop, in which case he probably would have shoved, and I could have got away from it. But
yeah,
I don't know.
No, I think with top two there, you're trapped, and he's, you know.
Yeah.
It's the murderer situation.
Well, it crippled me, and then later on I had an ace-jack of hearts. I flopped an ace-jack four, and I got all my chips in so happy against the guy that had two fours.
Just to explain, the prop bet that Dennis and I have, which is about a year and a half old now.
It is.
After Dennis took the horrible knockout shot in the 2009 main event where his ace-king got called by another ace-king. Oh, no, you called off with your ace-king.
I did.
And the other guy four-flushed the board and knocked you out of the tournament. In that year, Dennis had gotten knocked out of tournaments three times with ace-king. And in the couple of months to end that year, I'd gotten knocked out of three much smaller tournaments by calling off my stack with ace-king. And so the bet was, if either of us calls off your stack, which is very different than shoving your stack.
Big difference.
If you're making the other guy make the decision, that's a big deal. But if you call off your stack pre-flop with ace-king and get knocked out of the tournament, that's our bet. It's a $1,000 bet. And I don't collect here because you were crippled and not eliminated.
Yeah, and one of the worst prop bets I ever made in my life because I know I'm going to lose this thing.
It's the first thing you said.
Oh, absolutely.
Fact, 5 seconds after we made the bet live on this show, you said, why did I do that? I'm a thousand
horrible.
More likely
horrible
to do.
Horrible bet on my
You do
mind.
Play a lot more tournaments than I do. So anyway, I'm sorry to hear that, but you know, you'll get him back at the NBC Heads Up this week.
There you go.
While we're speaking about odd hands,
okay.
let's talk about the season debut of Season 7 of High Stakes Poker, which is now on Saturday nights on GSN. And instead of Gabe Kaplan in the booth, Norm MacDonald was there. We've talked about that enough over the last couple of weeks. I'll just say that I think Norm talks too much, doesn't need to describe the action, doesn't need to say, we could see fireworks. Those sort of comments are there. The players at the table, especially with these players who were there, when you got Antonio there and Doyle and Barry Greenstein and Vanessa Selbst and some of these others, they talk enough that you really could almost be silent. Take the Ali Najad attitude of less is more. So I don't think we needed all that much from Norm. But I want to talk to you about one specific hand, and it's the second hand that was on the show. After the first hand, where Vanessa Selbst had gotten into a battle with an amateur by the name of Robert Croak. There were several, I think there were three multimillionaire amateurs on the show. And Robert Croak had jacks, and Vanessa Selbst had ace-queen, and the board came out king-high, and eventually she knocked him off the hand because she had a flush draw on the turn and bet big, and he laid his jacks down. But in that hand, they had each asked the other player, Vanessa, and this player, Robert Croak, had each asked each other, how much did you start with? How much do you have? After that hand was done, Doyle said, I don't want to offend anybody here, but if you ask me how much I have, you can see my chips. I'm never going to tell you how much I have. You got to figure it out for yourself. I do not talk during the hand, which we've seen with Doyle.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
In the past. He does not talk during the hand, which I think is a great strategy. Mm-hmm. On the very next hand, one of the millionaire amateurs, Phil Ruffin, limps in from early position. There's a raise to 4,900 from Doyle in the cutoff. Vanessa Selps looks down on the button with a pair of queens and just limps. Antonio Esfandiari limps in from the big blind with 10-9 of diamonds. You got four players off to see the flop. And the flop comes out 4-9-3. So Antonio has flopped top pair. Phil Ruffin has flopped bottom set. And Vanessa Selps has a pair of queens. So Esfandiari leads out for about 17,000. Phil Ruffin just calls.
Yep.
And it's the way he says, "I call." When you and I watched this together, you actually laughed out loud.
Oh, my gosh.
Because you were picking stuff up off of this guy.
Well, he did so many tells there. I mean, he verbalized the call.
Yeah.
He looked straight at the dealer when he said it. You know, I mean, he chin went up in the air. I mean, it was like...
Yeah. I know.
There was a lot there.
Remember what Joe Navarro said last week about, you know... Anything that's like an anti-gravity move, when part of your body moves up, when their chin moves up, that usually means you got a big hand.
And the verbalizing, most people don't, and it was early, so maybe he does that every time.
You never know
for sure.
Right.
But verbalizing something is usually an indication that you want to make sure everybody knows it. You want to make sure the dealer doesn't make a mistake. You want to make sure you don't make a mistake. It usually is a sign of strength.
So Antonio had bet 17K. Ruffin had just called with his bottom set. Doyle gets out of the way. Vanessa now has her pair of queens. And after a little thought, she makes it 63 and change.
Yep.
Which is not an unreasonable move with a pair of queens on a board like that.
On a 9-high board.
Okay. Before Esfandiari can do anything, almost as soon as Vanessa has made her raise to 63,000, Ruffin says, make it 100.
Yeah.
Out of turn, and by the way, not enough for a raise.
Yeah.
So Esfandiari looks over, laughs, and folds his 10-9. His top pair is out. He makes it. He's told that he has to make it 117,100, and he does. And now Vanessa again starts asking him questions. So you got a big hand, and he goes, "I haven't looked."
Yeah, right.
Okay. She says, "No, really, do you have a good hand?" And he says, "Well, it's okay." And she says, "It's okay." Yeah, he says, "It's okay." And she says, "Is it a super amazing hand or something like that?" and now he realizes he shouldn't be talking, and he kind of gives a cryptic answer, doesn't say much of anything else. And Vanessa moves all in.
I know. One of the things you do, or should be doing any time, is trying to put the other person on a hand. All right, now, if he has some sort of overpair, the only two you can beat are tens and jacks.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of an overpair above that, you're in trouble.
Right.
Do you really think he's going to go all in and be that excited and everything like that on some sort of draw? Because it wasn't a draw-heavy board.
Well, there's two clubs on the board.
There is.
You got the nine of clubs, the four of clubs, and the three of diamonds. He could be on...
I see three hands he could have there that she would be ahead.
Okay.
Jacks, ten, or ace-king of clubs. That's it. And even on an ace-king of clubs, he almost has the pot odds to call then.
Yep. He might get it in with 6-5 of clubs.
Now, okay.
That's a great draw and a flush draw.
But now he, again...
Even ace-deuce of clubs. He'd have the open end, you know, he'd have the five.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. But again, this is an amateur, the first couple of hands. Do you really think he's going to be putting chips out there with a 6-5 of clubs to start with?
No.
He wouldn't even be in the hand, probably.
Right.
So those are the only hands, in my opinion, you can put him on that you can beat. And frankly, if it's not the jacks or the tens, you're almost at a race.
Right.
If he has the ace-king of clubs... He's got 15 outs.
Right.
Times two.
Yep.
It's, you know, coin tops.
Yep.
So you're hoping he has tens or jacks or you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Especially against an amateur.
Yeah.
Now, this is interesting because if you make this Phil Galfond or Zygmunt.
Oh, yeah.
Or Durr.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't know what the heck is going on. You're really, really confused. But there's no reason for her to be confused by this man's play.
I mean, it's difficult to play high stakes. I've played it. It's your own money. You're usually playing above your comfort level. Like Doyle says, what stakes do you like to play? Whatever it takes to make the other guy uncomfortable.
Right.
All right?
Yes.
So, I mean, it is something different. It's her first time there, I believe. So, you know, there's lots of things you can justify, and he's an amateur, and she got him to lay down the last time when she had nothing but an ace high and a draw.
Yep.
But think of the pot size. He made it 117 above her, 63 above what was out there previously. There's 200,000 in this thing.
Right.
All righty. He ain't laying it down. Even if he's on a club draw and he made a stupid play, he's not laying it down.
And yes, she does have a third of her stack in there, but she's got to know, again, against an amateur. I don't care if it's a rich amateur. This guy's got a hand.
Yeah.
He's not just fooling around here. He's not making a move here. He has a big, big hand, especially the way he bet out of turn.
Yeah. Well, he had so many tells, and you're right. Jumping in there with that insta raise.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. I was really, really shocked when she shoved when I saw that. Again, I know she's a great player. I've played with her in tournaments. She's extremely tough at a table.
Yep.
We're all entitled to make some mistakes now. But I think when she looks back at this, she's going to go, who was playing that hand? That wasn't me.
Well, you know what? It made for great TV, and that's why we watch high-stakes poker, to see exactly things like this. And if you're an amateur or a recreational player like me, and you see that sort of thing, you can watch TV and go, okay, there are people who've made mistakes as big as the ones I have and made it for even more money than I'll ever dream of putting into a pot.
Yeah. So now, again, some people are worried about looking foolish on the TV. And laying down a monster pair, you know, being bluffed out of a hand and all this other stuff. And that's other little things that go through your mind when you're sitting there if it's your first time and you're not used to it and you're not comfortable.
Yep.
And you're playing for stakes higher than you normally do. I mean, there's lots of things there. I'm not trying to defend her actions or anything. But, you know, it's difficult if you're not sitting at the table, let me tell you.
Yep, I'm sure. Anyway, it was great, and like I said, I hope in future shows Norm will be quieter, but the action will be good. And by the way, you'll see a couple more shows with that same lineup. And I like this guy, Bill Klein, who was one of the millionaire amateurs. Here's the reason I like him. When he wins, his winnings go to charity. When he loses, he matches whatever he lost and gives it to charity.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That's really, really nice.
That is class.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Fossil Man will be with us. Greg Raymer, the 2004 main event champion, will tell you about his Fossil Man poker training class that's coming here to Harrah's St. Louis during the circuit event at the beginning of April. And we'll also talk about the circuit event he just played in Florida, both the tournaments and what he was telling me on the phone yesterday were some pretty wild cash games. This portion of the Final Table is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
PokerStars.net, that's the site I play. If you want to play against me, come on down. Sign up for PokerStars.net, download the software, and start playing. So many things are going on with PokerStars right now. We have the LAPT coming up, or sorry, the NAPT out at LA. I need a few more letters there, don't I?
Yeah. It's coming at the bike next week.
Next week, it absolutely is. It starts, I believe, on Sunday. We'll be out there for that. They've got a bounty shootout. They've got a number of other ones. A total of seven or eight different tournaments going on that week. And then they go in a few weeks after that out to the Mohegan Sun, and it's going to continue just from there. PokerStars has so many things going on right now. They just announced that their EPT main event is going over to Madrid. It's going to switch from Monte Carlo, where it's been for the last several years, over to Madrid. Be the first time there. Should be pretty awesome. I'm looking forward to that. I'm telling you, go to PokerStars.net, download the software, start playing, and you could end up in almost anywhere in the world. They have tournaments everywhere.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I am Paul Harris on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And our podcast available via iTunes and on thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show live from the feature table in the poker room at Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is up to $161,000. And a whole bunch of people are playing both tournaments and cash games here, as they are every single day. They've got 14 tournaments a week, and the big tournament coming up starting on March 31st and running for almost 2 weeks will be the World Series of Poker Circuit event. And all through the month of March, you can come in and for free enter into a contest where you might win a seat in the main event. In fact, first place in this giveaway is not just the seat into the $1,600 main event, which will be on April 10th, but also seats in five other events along the way. And there will be not just No Limit Hold'em events, but also PLO events and Omaha High Low and Stud and a bunch of other things going on over the course of those 10 or 12 days. Also, first place will get a seat in Greg Raymer's Fossil Man Poker Training School that he's going to be doing here on Saturday, April 9th in the Harrah's Ballroom. In fact, 10 people will get those seats into Greg's poker school. And so we've invited Greg to join us here on the final table to talk about that and other things. The winner of the 2004 main event, Greg Raymer.
Greg,
how's it going,
who,
boys?
Maybe people don't realize he graduated from Parkway South. He's from the graduated from the University of Missouri in Rolla. In addition to the main event win that you mentioned, he's cashed 13 other times in the WSOP, twice in the WPT. He has career earnings approaching $7 million. And one thing that I love about it, he's been a great advocate for poker. He's been in the halls of Congress fighting for it. He's been a board member for the PPA. He is going to be here in St. Louis. He's going to be playing the tournaments here, and he's going to be doing a live poker seminar on Saturday, April 9th. And you can register for it now at fossilmanpokertraining.com. Greg, welcome to the final table.
You know, Dennis, if you weren't already so busy, I would definitely offer you the job as my PR director. I mean, if I thought you'd accept, I'd give you the job. I can't afford you, though, either. You make too much money playing tournaments and everything else you do. I can't afford to pay that much.
I try to emulate you, and let me tell you, it'd be an honor to be a spokesperson for you, that's for sure.
Well, Greg, you obviously could do a great job.
Greg, I was down there at the Palm Beach Kennel Club 2 weekends ago in Florida and took place in some of the early tournament and cash game action. I know you've been there all weekend long. You played in the main event there and a bunch of other things. But when I talked to you on the phone yesterday, you were telling me about some of the great cash game action you were involved in, including a wild dealer's choice game. And I started to tell Dennis about this off the air, and I said, no, I'm going to have Greg tell you about it on the air. So fill him in.
Well, the last three nights, when I've been done with the tournament play, we have started up a dealer's choice game. And we want this to be fun, so you know, I wasn't trying to like get people to play as high as they could possibly afford. I was just trying to create a small game to have fun and to basically introduce a lot of these different games to the Kennel Club Poker Room. I really love all these draw games and Omaha games and stud games and stuff like that. And, I'm always a little disappointed that these other games aren't gaining in popularity the way No Limit Hold'em is. So I'm doing everything I can to promote them. So I said, let's just do a small game. We'll play one round of each game, and everyone will get their turn picking the game they want to play. And so you could pick anything that they were allowed to spread. And I was really impressed with the wide variety of games that we were allowed to spread down here.
I'm telling you, you're not one of the guys I want sitting at my table when we start playing a wide variety of games. I have played Chinese poker with you. I've seen some others. If I remember right, at the PCA, you cashed in two different tournaments, an eight-game one and a flipple draw. Tell people what a flipple draw is.
I was third and fourth in the eight-game championship and the flipple draw. Well, flipple is a contraction for five triple, because we were playing a rotation of five different versions of triple draw.
Wow.
So we were playing ace to five triple draw, deuce to seven, and also Badoogie, Badoosie, and Badacy. I wish that was the world championship event. I would give myself a reasonable shot at repeating.
Let me tell you, if the odds were posted at the Rio for who would win the flipple draw, I'm voting on Greg.
Well, I've told you this story, and I've told a bunch of other people in St. Louis, but I don't think I've ever told it on the air. About three summers ago, I was at the Rio during the World Series of Poker, and I was playing in the 5-10 cash game like I always do, and Greg came into the room, and I walked over to say hello to them, and we talked for a little while, and he said, excuse me, Paul, for just a second, and he turned to one of the floor guys who had the big board with all the games on it, and Greg said to the guy, can you start a 300-600 BOT game? Badoogie, Omaha, triple draw. And the floor guy said, of course, Greg, and he puts it up on the board, and Greg and I continue talking for about 10 minutes, and in those 10 minutes, the game fills up. And so Greg excuses himself, says, I'll see you later, and they go over and they start the game, and I go back to my game. About 90 minutes or 2 hours later, I go over to see what's going on in this game that Greg started, and Greg has all the chips. All the chips. I mean, he's got such a mass. It was like at the end of the World Series, that stack of chips, it looked like that's what he had in front of him, and nobody else had a stack at all. And I leaned over and I said, Greg, what's going on here? He said, no one knows how to play Badoogie. And when I tell people that story, I say, here's the valuable lesson you should take from that. When a pro starts a game, He's going to know how to play it. And if you don't, don't sit down at the table with him.
Well, that's one thing at 300, 600. What we're doing down here is 1-2 blinds for the no limit or pot limit games and 4-8 limit for the limit games.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this is not a game where, I mean, 300, 600, you know, the average pot, if you have an aggressive table, the average pot is easily $10,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, for the game we're playing here at the Kennel Club, the you know, average pot is certainly less than 100.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, very, very different story here, basically two orders of magnitude smaller.
But you were also playing some double board games, you were telling me, and some weird PLO options.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can play things here like what they call reverse Omaha is their phrase for it, but it's five-card Omaha where you must use three from your hand and two from the board. They're doing double board games of Omaha and Hold'em where there's two flops, two turns, two rivers, and you can use either board to make your hand. And that might be played high only or high-low split. Last night, a player from Sweden was sitting next to me. He, when we started the game, he won the button, so he also got to pick the first game. And he wanted to play a game called Sviten. Not Sweden, but Sviten, with a T in the middle and
no
a V
clue.
Instead of it. You know, but he says this is a game they like to play in Sweden. It's a combination. It's a split pot game that's half Omaha, half five card draw. It's five card Omaha. You have five cards
okay.
in your hand, so you get dealt five cards and you have a round of betting. The dealer puts out the flop. You have a round of betting. Now you get to draw zero to five cards.
What the
you can
heck?
Exchange zero to five cards from your hand.
Five cards you can draw.
Well, you would be foolish to still be in. You
yeah.
know, I mean, like, why would you be betting or calling bets
okay.
you know, if you were going to draw five cards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can if you want to. after the draw, the dealer immediately puts out the turn card. You then do the third round of betting. The river is dealt, final round of betting. At showdown, you use two from your hand, three from the board to make the best Omaha high hand. And you use all five cards in your hand to make the best five-card draw hand. And those two hands split the pot.
Wow. You know, it's getting closer to going to a casino and playing in a real home game. You know, I mean, you're only one away from Iron Cross and Elevator and Spit in the Ocean.
Well, they could do spits here, too. We were doing, or they call them spinners. Like, we'd play a stud game, and after the dealer gave everyone their Third Street up card, they would put a card face up on the table, and everyone could use that as part of their hand.
Oh, my gosh.
Holy cow.
Okay,
so, I mean, we were doing all kinds of stuff, and, of course, we just did games that aren't common, but, you know, you can find them either online or in real casinos all the time, like Deuce to Seven triple draw,
yeah.
Deuce to Seven single draw, Raz, you know. But, I mean, most people know what Raz is if they're poker players, but how often do they play it?
Never.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's great. You know, let's play Raz. You know, let's play Deuce to Seven Raz. Let's play Ace to Five triple draw. You know, the more the merrier. I mean, back when the 4,000, 8,000 big game was at its height, you know, with Chip Reese and Doyle and Barry Greenstein and those guys back like in 03, 04, 05, 06, I think they used to typically play a rotation of like 12 to 15 games.
Well, again, you're saying some of the same thing we've heard before. Jennifer Harmon came in here and started talking about Bobby's Room and how they had to expand it up to about 12 games to play simply because too many people knew the original 5, 6, 7, 8 games that they were doing and they wanted to have an advantage, so they started introducing other games. Barry Greenstein, when we talked to him, was talking, I think, about a horse game that why should he play No Limit when everybody knows No Limit? He can play, you know, an Omaha or a stud or a Raz or whatever it happens to be that other people at the table are not very good
at. He said that about the 8-game mix at the
series
last
year. That's what it was.
You know, I'm not going to play I'm going to try to keep the no limit and PLO rounds as small as I can for me, and I'll take advantage of them in the limit games,
yep.
like Raz and the others, where he could just crush them. But my question for you is, I know you've been playing poker a long time, but how do you know the strategy of games that you haven't played that somebody's introducing? How do you know how to play them well, or at that stakes, do you not even care?
Well, no, I'm going to try to play my best, of course, even at small stakes. But, yeah, when the guy calls Sviten and tells us what the game is, and I've never played it before, you just got to use your kind of generic poker abilities to think about it a little bit. And you got to say to yourself things like, you know, in Omaha, you would want things like, I want a flop where I have like two pair or trips with the cards on the board, as well as like straight and flush draws. But that probably means that between the draws and the cards that you've paired, you're using everything in your hand. So now you wouldn't be drawing any cards, but then how strong is your hand for the five-card draw, half of the pot?
Yeah,
in other words, it's just a generic thing in any split-pot game that you usually shouldn't play hands that are definitely only going to win one way.
Yeah.
So just generic concepts like that that you'd learn from the other forms of poker, you have to apply them to this new form. When it comes to the games like Deuce to Seven, Triple Draw, and Badoogie, you know, after I won the main event and I was traveling all over the world, you know, especially back then in 04, 05, going a lot to Vegas and L.A., you know, I knew I was going to want to play the big mix games, because at Foxwoods, I played, you know, what was our big mix game there, which was usually like 75-150 or 100-200, but Foxwoods is only allowed to spread the horse games. So we never played Triple Draw and Badoogie. But if I wanted to play the big mix games in L.A. or Vegas, I was going to have to play those games. So knowing that fact, I basically spent the equivalent of 3 or 4 days full-time, so like, let's say 40 hours, sitting there crunching numbers and doing the math and thinking about those games.
Wow.
And then I went, you know, with the intention of paying my dues, you know, and I'll try to stick to, you know, somewhat smaller games, like 100, 200 instead of 400, 800. But then the honest thing was, is the first time I played, I think I was at the Commerce playing 100, 200 mixed, which included Badoogie and Triple Draw. And the very first hand I was playing, it's like a couple of the players, I was just recognizing decisions that they made, and I thought to myself, like, that has to be fundamentally mathematically wrong. That can't be the right decision. And so from that point forward, I just was like, you know, even though I was novice then and I've learned a lot since, I think I was already plus EV in that game the first time I sat down because of that, you know, week of time I invested studying the games.
Well, you have two extremely good points there. Number one, there is a certain card sense, things that transgress the individual game out there, be they a tell on a player, be it betting patterns, be it whatever. And if you have that card sense, that absolutely gives you a leg up. Second thing that you brought out there were just some common sense card items when you have a split pot, trying to get both of them. I mean, you know, it's as simple as drawing to an inside straight, which everybody realizes. There are certain things you just don't do in card games, whatever that particular card game is. And if you recognize that, you've got a leg up on the average person.
Mm-hmm.
So two very valid points that you bring up there.
Well, that's like one reason in my seminars, I'll often encourage the students to learn some of the other games. I think if you know, even if you know that No Limit Hold'em is going to be your main game, you know, for the foreseeable future, if you learn how to play Raz, you learn how to play Triple Draw, you learn how to play Omaha High-Low, I think that will make you a better No Limit Hold'em player. Because some concepts are fundamental to all forms of poker, but the lesson is easier to learn in some games than it is in others.
Oh, good point.
And I would add that now is the time to learn those other games, because the general consensus is No Limit Hold'em has gotten tougher to play, both at the tournament and cash game level, over the last few years, because the field has gotten better, either because the poorer players have gone away or because everybody has gotten smarter and learned how to play the game because they've played it so much. And yet some of these other games, like I'm trying to get more people to play PLO, and the other games that you mentioned, Greg, those are, for a large part of that field, still at the beginning phase. And so now is the time for other players to do their best to learn those games, because you still have people to take advantage of who aren't as good at it. And that is, after all, the idea of poker. Yeah, you go out to have a good time, but in the end, in a tournament, you have to take everybody's chips. In a cash game, you want to go home with more chips than you left, and for that, you've got to take them from the other players. And if you have a game where you have that edge, now is the time to have that edge.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, when I look at the tournament fields today, and you get a player at your table who doesn't play that well and goes broke, and people are talking about, like, wow, he was so bad, you know, once he's out of earshot. Well, when I compare that guy to the guy that filled that role 10 years ago, the guy today who's considered the horrible player is, like, you know, 10 times better 50 times better
yeah.
than the guy who filled that role 10 years ago.
Right.
So the best players are better, the worst players are better. And that's the key is if the worst players were still just as horrible as they used to be, then it wouldn't matter that the best players are better than they used to be as well. You'd still be having lots of profit potential in a tournament. But the chances are going down. You know, it's harder to win.
Yeah, I love still sitting at some of these charity tournaments and having to explain what beats what and then trying to get them to come over to play a live game. They never come, but it's like, why don't you come on over here? I'll keep teaching you.
Yeah.
Anyway. Hey, I wanted to talk about the Fossil Man Poker training that you're bringing to St. Louis.
Yep.
If you can give us a little bit of a lowdown on what all that includes. Already had several people talking about it here and wanting to sign up. So why don't
cool.
you give us the 30-second synopsis of it?
Sure. I mean, what we're going to do is this is going to be an all-day seminar focused on no-limit hold'em tournament play. We will spend 3 hours in the morning from about 9 to noon doing lecture. We'll break for lunch. Harris is giving us all free comps to the buffet at the Harris Casino. Then from about 1 to 5, we're going to do live hand instruction. So myself and the other instructors will each be a dealer, and we will have up to 10 students at the table with us. And the students will play against each other as if it were a real tournament, like they were playing for the ring in the circuit event. At the end of the hand, I will kind of tell them one at a time to show me their cards, and I'll critique their decisions. You know, I'll discuss why I, you know, liked or didn't like their pre-flop raise or their call on the turn or whatever, and why I liked it or didn't like it. You know, I'll ask them questions. It's kind of, you know, what did you put her on when you made that call? You know, and why did you put her on it? You know, or did anyone else notice the tell that he gave off there? When I dealt the river card, you know, did you see the way he kind of leaned forward about 2 inches? You know, that probably indicates that he liked that river card. So that's why I think when he shows us his cards in a second, he's going to show us that he made that flush. So I'll be doing that at one table. I still need to talk to you, Dennis, to see whether you'll be one of the instructors. And then we've got John Adams probably lined up. And we'll just, depending upon how many students sign up, we'll have one pro for about every 10 students in the seminar. And the instructors will just switch tables so that everyone gets time with each of us.
Well, I've been invited to several different academies, invited to do some instructions. I've turned them all down for the last few years. However, I'm not for sure I can turn down Greg. He's a friend of mine. He wants me to do it here in St. Louis. I will be involved.
Well, we'll talk offline,
and
you can let me know, because I don't want to. I'm not trying to put you on the spot by bringing this up on the air, but you know, you've been busy. So we haven't been able to make touch on the phone the last few days, but that's the main thing I wanted to talk to you about is whether you're available and all that. So we'll do that offline, but in any event, the listeners know that, you know, either way they're going to get, you know, world-class instructors who are going to make them better players.
Now, that whole day is going to cost $299, but if you register for this before March 18th, you can save $50 as an early bird special Greg is offering, and get in for $249. And that for this whole day of play, that's a $249 investment in the rest of your poker playing career. Hopefully it makes you better as a poker player, and you earn that money back later on in either cash games or tournaments. That's the idea behind this. If you want to register, you can do it right now on Greg's website, which is fossilmanpokertraining.com. We, of course, will have links to it on the Final Table website as well, on thechipleader.com, Dennis's site. But again, you can save money if you sign up in the next couple of weeks. It is going to be Saturday, April 9th, as Greg mentioned. Harris is going to give everybody lunch. We're going to do it in one of the ballrooms here at Harris. And by the way, it's the day before the main event of the WSOP circuit that is coming here to St. Louis. It's the day of the ladies' event, which may mean some women can't come to play in this, but it also means that it's an off day for all the other ring events that day. And so you can come down and get a day's worth of great training in how to be a better tournament player from, well, I'm assuming Dennis is going to do this, from two of the best. Plus, in John, you get one of the best cash game players in St. Louis who will teach you some amazing things as well. A lot of people in this town are in awe of him as well, and hopefully that will bring more people out. So fossilmanpokertraining.com.
Yeah, and I think I can safely say that I'm going to be there at one of the tables too if Greg will have me. But to put this in perspective, $249, that's possibly moving up one position in a tournament. That's one hand at a 5-10 table. That's not very much. If you can pick up some training here, a little bit maybe, if nothing else, a review before you go into the main event on Sunday, it's going to be well worth it.
Yep. All right, Greg, we're going to let you go here, and pretty soon all of us have to head west, you from Florida to Las Vegas, us from St. Louis to Las Vegas, because you and Dennis are going to be in the NBC Heads Up Tournament later on this week, and I guess we'll see you at Pure, the Caesars Palace nightclub, for the draw party on Thursday night, right?
Exactly, and I'm going to hope Dennis and I are on opposite sides, so I don't have I don't want to take him out, and I don't want him to take me out, so I would rather he be on opposite sides so that if that unfortunate matchup occurs, that at least it'll be for first and second.
You know, I would like nothing more than to be shaking your hand across the table on Sunday.
You know, I'm not going to ask who each of you would like to play, because I know what the answer is. The answer is someone who will bluff off all their chips when I have the nuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's probably, you know, in the past you've had a couple of qualifiers who get in who are not necessarily highly skilled players, but I think they've eliminated most of that this year, so I can't think of anyone who you can look at and say, oh, like, well, that guy's going to definitely be easier to beat than the rest of the field.
Yep.
Well, there's a couple of celebrities like Emmett Smith that are going to be there that I have no idea what kind of a poker player he is. But for the most part, of the 64 people, 50-some of them are pretty good players.
Oh, yeah.
So
we'll see you at Caesars Palace, Greg. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
Right, take care, Greg.
Greg Fosselman Raymer, once again, FosselmanPokerTraining.com. You can sign up for his day-long poker seminar, which will be here at Harrah's St. Louis. And whenever you want to find out what's going on in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, you go to harrahs.com/STLPoker. Okay, a couple of other things in the news that we want to get to. Congratulations again to our recent guest, Eric Seidel.
Wow.
Who, after taking down the 250K high roller event in Australia, and after coming in, I don't know, what was it, third in the 100K event at the PCA.
Fourth at the PCA high roller, third in the 100,000 in Australia, first in the quarter million one.
And takes down the title in the 25K high roller at the L.A. Poker Classic at the Commerce, which just ended a couple of days ago. He gets another $144K for that.
What's he going to do for tax write-offs?
You know, he's become a high roller specialist.
Absolutely.
Here's the weird thing about this. He did not take down the most money for this. In fact, two other guys made more money. He does get the title of champion of this, and I guess whatever hardware, a bracelet or a watch or whatever they gave away for this. But it turns out that they made a deal when they were down to the last three. There were only 18 players in this. So it's two tables who played down, and the top three got paid. And when they got down to top three, it was Eric Seidel, Darren Elias, and Elke, Bertrand Grospillier.
Right.
They made a deal at three-handed and said, you know what, let's all take X number of dollars, and then we'll play for another 30K and the ring, bracelet, watch, whatever it is. And at that point, Eric was the short stack. And so he got the least amount of money.
Now, for most people to realize, with 18 people only playing three spots, it is extremely top-heavy to first place.
Yep.
First place is getting somewhere close to half of the prize pool.
Yep.
So therefore, a three-way chop, shall we say, giving something from first place to third place, is a nice, safe way to do it. You're all guaranteed of a decent prize pool then. I would probably look very favorably upon that, too. And Eric, being short stack, obviously thought it was a good deal.
Yes.
He didn't know he was getting aces.
Correct. On the next hand, right after the chop, he gets aces against Elke's ace-queen and Elias's pocket nines, doubles up, triples up, in fact, and then he gets it in against Elias, heads up later on, and takes the whole thing down. But what a roll he is on. Bluff Magazine has come out with its list of the Poker Power 20, the most influential people in poker. And there are people on here who we know, like Matt Savage of the WPT, Doyle Brunson, Phil Hellmuth, John Pappas of the PPA, Maury Eskandani, who produces the NBC Heads Up and High Stakes Poker and Poker After Dark, Daniel Negreanu, Phil Ivey. Number one on the list is Howard Lederer. Number two, Esai Scheinberg, founder of PokerStars. Number three, Ty Stewart, who is the executive director of WSOP and the vice president of the parent company, Caesars Interactive. I'm a little surprised that Howard's number one on the list, considering his online poker site Full Tilt Poker is number two in the world behind PokerStars.
I'm surprised. I like Howard. He's a friend of mine. I wouldn't have had him in the top three or four, I don't think, even. I know he's influential. I know he's done a great job with the PPA. I know he's been very, very positive for all the poker players around there, and I give, you know, a lot of applause to him for that. Mm-hmm. But for him to be voted basically the most influential, I kind of question that a little bit.
How about number four on the list, Senator Harry Reid, the former majority leader, now minority leader, in the United States Senate, the senator from Nevada, who did not get an online poker bill passed. After all those years of opposing it, he switched sides, jumped on board because of some lobbying dollars, we think, and then didn't get it passed during the lame duck session. How is he the number four most influential person in poker when he hasn't accomplished a single thing for poker?
No, he shouldn't even be on the list, frankly.
Absolutely.
And any poll is always a little bit, or poll is a little bit skewed around there. You don't necessarily agree with it, but usually in general you agree with it.
I would have put one of the ESPN executives on here. I know that this is not organizations, it's individuals, and I don't know who it is at ESPN who makes the decisions about their World Series of Poker coverage, but that is, for people who are not into poker as much as we are, maybe people who don't listen to this show, but just your average Joe and Jane, what they know about poker comes from those 26 weeks of ESPN's coverage of the main event and the other things, and the stories that they tell through 441 Productions, the production company, and in fact the influence they have over the scheduling of events during the World Series of Poker. I would have put somebody from there on as well.
Easy argument for that, and I can agree with you. Again, I wonder who it was that was voting for these people.
Media people, and I don't know who else is on the list. I was never asked, and I know you weren't either. Let's see what else I want to mention before we go. Oh, you mentioned the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, which you can join by going to theppa.org. Just a quick update on online poker. New Jersey has been moving towards making their own intrastate online poker bill. There has been one that has passed both houses in the New Jersey legislature. It is in front of Governor Christie. He has until Thursday to veto it. If he doesn't veto it, it becomes law, and they move forward with it. At the same time, Florida, next Tuesday, will consider its own intrastate online poker bill. If that passes, they say it could be real by July. Iowa is going to have a bill introduced in the next week for intrastate online poker. And we know California and Nevada are moving in that direction as well. You're shaking your head as if this is all bad.
Oh, a lot of it is, to be honest. Christie, I think, is just sitting on his thumbs waiting for this thing to become law so he can say he didn't vote for it or didn't sign it or whatever, so he can have some deniability, because he's been trying to straddle the fence on this thing for quite a while, and he's going to be running for national office. The one in Florida is horrendously poorly written. It calls for three platforms, but only platforms, I think, put forth by brick-and-mortar casinos within the state at the present time. It's not a clear playing field. Each and every single one of these is limited within the state's borders. Mm-hmm. It's just horrendously poor that way, because you can only play against other people within the state. So that means if Iowa goes forward with this, you can only play against people that live in Iowa. You can't play against the rest of the world. You can't play against the rest of the states.
Well, what it might eventually be is kind of like what Powerball is, individual states getting together and making it so you can play against each other. But you know, eventually we're going to have a federal bill on this, and the good news on that front is that Senator Kyle from Arizona, who's been one of the leading opponents of legalizing it, has announced he's not going to run again.
Bye-bye.
One other quick legal thing. Texas may legalize casinos, or maybe just poker and card rooms like California, breaking the longtime irony that Texas Hold'em is not legal in Texas.
There you go. I would love to see that.
That's all from
Sammy
here.
Sammy Fahal might like to see that.
He would love it. That's all from here in Harrah's, St. Louis. For Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. We're headed out to Vegas, where we'll record a whole bunch of interviews for next week's Final Table show at the NBC Heads Up at Caesars. We'll see you back here next Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And our podcasts are on thechipleader.com and via iTunes. And for those of you who missed last week's show, we apologize. We had a power failure, lost the audio. We promise to never let it happen again.